interview with Grace Hamilton, member of Georgia legislature and longtime activist in civil rights in Atlanta, April 29th, 1974.
I've been thinking a lot recently about the influence of the requirement for reapportionment in its almost all-pervading influence in the Georgia government, beginning, of course, with the abolition of the county unit system, which I guess the first application was, of that was in the congressional elections. And so, and then following with court action, which required the reapportionment of the Senate, and then finally the House.
Let me interrupt you a minute, if I might, Mrs. Hamilton. You've been in the House how long?
I was elected in 1965 in a special election resulting from the first reapportionment of the House as a result of court order.
Were there any blacks in the House at that time?
No.
And how many were elected with you?
And I always forget. I always have to count up. I think there were... I can tell you exactly if you want me to go get
that's all right.
About eight in the House for the race. Most of them.
Now, Leroy Johnson was already elected, serving in the Senate.
Yes, he had been elected when the Senate was reapportioned the first time, and then a second black was elected to the Senate in, you know, the next regular election, and then came, that must have been about 63. 62 or 63. Then came the House reapportionment, and they, in Fulton County, which had had only three representatives prior to that, on the basis of the application of one man, one vote decision, had 26 in Fulton County, all single member districts except for five, which were defined as flotarial. That was in 66. Then, let's see. I'm trying to remember what was the, I'm a little foggy on the sequence because the House and Senate had to be reapportioned. And the size of the House was reduced, and that took place in 1970, I guess. And then the size of the Fulton delegation was the total size was 24, with three functioning at large, and as a result of this, well, there were blacks elected from one other urban area. No, two urban areas besides metropolitan Atlanta on the first go round, in Augusta and in Columbus. And then, as it was the next time, there were representation from Savannah, increased the representation from Chatham County to Savannah.
How many blacks in the legislature now?
I think it's 14.
House and Senate?
Yeah.
Is there an active black caucus?
Yes. Well, I say active. It's still informal, and I'm not really... I swing back and forth from thinking it's useful to... But it's useful, but it's very informal, and... I don't think it's as effective as it, you know, might be, but it's...
How does it function? Is there a chairman as such?
They choose at the beginning of each section a person they call a convener. And in recent years, the Southern Policy Center, which is in operation over here at Clark, has provided interns, students largely from some of the institutions in the Atlanta area, who are interested in learning. And I guess there is some learning benefit. Sometimes I wonder. But they do talk about matters which concern the whole state as well as concern the black population. And I'm sure it provides more exposure maybe than they would have otherwise.
Are there any black legislators in Georgia from rural counties?
No, not yet. I guess, no. One from Columbus, two from Savannah, one from Augusta, and all the rest from the Atlanta metropolitan area, two from DeKalb County, and all the rest in Atlanta.
And they're all Democrats?
Yeah.
Well, can you give me any examples of how the caucus has functioned on a specific issue?
I don't think I'm a good one to talk to you about that. You really ought to talk to somebody who has carried some responsibility as the convener. I think the definition of what they hope to do. Now, there is a region-wide organization of black elected officials.
Right.
Which you know about.
Right.
Whom have you talked to in that?
Mr. McIntyre.
Ed McIntyre, you know. Well, I think it's beginning to pull itself together in terms of getting a focus. My feeling in the beginning was that the range of participation was too wide, you know, everybody from county officials to the state level. But I think they're beginning to be able to differentiate a little bit more in terms of objectives. But in the state legislature, I don't think we're at that point yet. And the Georgia legislature, it's improving in terms of its organization, which makes better work possible, but it's got a long way to go. So for the legislators who carry any major responsibility in the standing committees, it just means that you just physically don't have there's not the time available to put much time nor thought on the caucus per se. So it really is, it functions as an informal, sort of clearinghouse, you know.
Was the caucus involved in any direct way, or even indirect way, say, in the hanging of the King portrait?
I don't think so. No. That was an idea which was promoted through the governor's office, promoted by way of the governor's staff, and an advisory committee was organized, which made the decision about the portraits which would be done and hung. And of course, King was the first one. Now they're moving on to the other two. And, oh dear, I'm sorry. But the caucus, except to remind people that it was going to occur.
Do you perceive any growing, let me phrase the question more objectively. How do you perceive blacks viewing the electoral process and politics in general at the moment? You find growing interest or growing disinterest and apathy? Both in Atlanta, Georgia-wide, and South-wide.
Well, I'm not a good... I don't think my judgment about South-wide and even too much state-wide is worth anything, because my first-hand contact is in this metropolitan Atlanta area, except by way of the people I know over the state, you know, who tell me about or
right.
call to ask. I think there is more recognition of the importance of electoral of participation in the electoral process. But in the Atlanta area, and I don't know whether this is statewide or not, just because I haven't checked it out, the actual percentage of participation has been declining, which, you know, is very distressing. There's more...
You mean percentage of registered voters or percentage of those eligible to register?
No, percentage of those registered. And back in the 40s, when the concerted effort in the state on increasing the registration, the percentage of black participation was higher than white, which was a fact, you know, was surprising to me when I discovered it here in this area. But in the 72 election, of course the total participation rate was low, but it was less than it had declined from the you wanted to go into the back. You need to so there is sudden in this area the conversation about it, you know, and the mass attention to it, to registration. But the participation rate is, what I call participation rate is the percent of those registering, those who are registered, actually going to vote, is, what that's due to, I don't know. Well, I know it's due to probably a lot of factors, because there's more deputizing of neighborhood registrars all through the year, and the ease of registration has been greatly increased. There's the lag. There's not the follow-up on people moving their registration. There's great mobility in the Atlanta area. And the people don't change their registration and then don't bother to... That's at least that's my impression.
Is there... Do you detect any sense of apathy among people who... particularly poorer people who feel they've registered and they voted and nothing happened to... affect their lives?
No, I don't think so, because I think the recent experience in Atlanta, you know, is a contradiction to that.
Right.
That and the... I started by thinking of talking about the relevance of changes in the structure for representation, and reapportionment did it on the state level, and the succeeding modifications in reapportionment have increased. We just, the Legislative Council just called to say that they just had word, this is the last day, that justice will not object to the last reapportionment of 15 House districts, multi-member House districts, which they were required to modify. And that's going to make a difference, so that I'm quite sure in this coming election there will be black representation from parts of the state where they've never had it before, probably from the urban areas, from Macon, Bibb County, and from Daugherty County, at least. I mean,
Daugherty County is what city?
It's Albany. It's Daugherty County, Lee, and then two surrounding and the same principle applies in the districting, in the organization of the city. Now, the thing that made a great difference in Atlanta for this recently elected city government was that the charter provided 12 single-member districts and 6 at-large, where heretofore the whole legislative body before had been completely at-large. And though there had been, I think, 3 black aldermen, it worked out this time in a way which I think surprised all of us who to coming out just precisely on the population basis. And, of course, that increased the participation in the municipal election.
So there are how many total aldermen now, 18?
There are 18, and I think there are 8. There are 12 by districts and 6 by linked districts elected at large. And I think there are 9 black and 9 white, you know, just right down the line, which just worked out that way, I think, too. Everybody's surprised.
Your political activity began when?
Well, describing political activity as running for public office, it began in 65.
Well, in the broad sense.
But from, I came back to Atlanta to live in 42 and worked for 15 years as the executive director of the Atlanta Urban League. And the league in those days worked on public matters which pretty much depended upon influencing the public sector on schools and health and hospital facilities and to some degree on jobs. And the registration effort both in the city and the state was born in the league's office in the late 40s, 46, 40. So, you know, I've had a concern, and more or less, though I always called it political education, but I had not, in my scheme of things, I had not thought of running for public office.
I understand you in those days were one of Mayor Hartfield's backdoor advisors. Was it literally back door?
No, never any back door. Not for Gracie. But in those days, the Hartsfield was always a person who, well, that was the way the system worked in those days, you know, that he was able to and always ready to get input from people who had contacts or activities which related to his ultimate, you know, to his job.
And what prompted you to run for office the first time?
I just happened to be in a district when after the reapportionment plan was approved in 65, and we knew that there were going to be these 24 places where before there had been just 3, and there was many people, I think, began saying, well, you know, where would there be, where is there somebody that ought to offer for the House? And when we were looking at the maps, I was making a list of another colleague of mine said, takes credit for having suggested, I was talking with him, he's Representative Daugherty, who had offered for public office before, and I was talking to him about who ought to run. He said, well, why on earth don't you? It just came as something I just never had thought about before. And I did. Because I, you know, was right in the midst of a new House district.
What changes have you seen in the legislature since that time? It's been almost 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I have seen an increase in the members of the House who seem to be better equipped by their preparation for the task that the legislature is supposed to serve. In the main, I think we see better equipped members. We've seen an erosion, a constant erosion of what is still the power base in the Georgia legislature of the people from the rural, what are thought of as the rural spots, you know.
But are they still perceived to be the predominant force in the legislature? Even though weakening and eroding in strength?
I think when it comes right down to it, I need to say one thing, but we were fortunate. The man who was the Speaker of the Georgia House, though representing that part of the state, was a very unusual person in that he and had great leadership skills in being able to move the group in a slowly but forward.
Who is this?
That was George L. Smith. And somebody said that the speaker played. I probably ought to try to quote it, but I thought it was so apropos. And he played he knew how to use political power, and he played it as many other people would play a great organ. You know, he knew just how to. But the result of that was he could hold together the people who would normally be for him, but at the same time move them forward. And during the years that he, because when I first went over there, he was not the speaker. He was elected speaker, I think, in the second year.
But wasn't he elected speaker after Maddox's election? Or the year, same, following that election? Following the 66 election?
He was, let me see, he must have been elected speaker in 66. Because he was not speaker the first year we were over there, that first year, which was the year, yeah, that was the last year of Sanders administration, so. He was elected speaker the year we established legislative independence. And greatly improved the administration of the House and reduced the committees, you know, his leadership got the House reduced a little bit. See, it used to be a House of 192, I think, and got down to 180, which, as he said, was as far as they could go right then.
And it's now what?
It's still 180. There are many people who think it ought to be smaller, including me. But I don't know how. And that there ought to be some relationship to the.
Is there any difference now and when you first got to the legislature and how you were treated, being both black and female?
Oh, that's a very usual question. And I can honestly say that from the very beginning, I was never subject to any discourtesy, you know, for being black or being a woman either. Now, the thing that I have seen very slowly, and I think there is more recognition. You know, that you're able to do a good job on, so you get a chance to be included on. But, and I don't know whether this is racial or whether it's sex or whether it is just the way the system goes. But it's there is still reluctance to include in certain of the innermost workings people who normally should be included. Now, Representative Daugherty and I both have been on the Appropriations Committee ever since we've been over there. And yet, the steering committee of the little, never has included us, though we are listed as, you know, as a vice chairman of one of the subcommittees, which never really functions. Now that works also when it comes to representation from the urban areas. It's almost the same. And there have been two or three in-house sort of showdowns, you know, on the fact that any interim planning in the process of the Appropriations Committee work was just going to have a representative of the Urban Caucus, somebody from the Urban Caucus. And that was done this year.
How many caucuses are there? It is an urban caucus.
There's an urban caucus,
which is
a very useful one. I mean, it's much more organized.
The urban caucus bipartisan?
Yeah. And it's increasingly useful.
The impression I have is that in Georgia, the division between urban and rural is the predominant one.
Right, that's right.
Is there a rural caucus?
Oh, yes. They call it the Cotton Caucus. I don't know what they do. They organized after the second year of the Urban Caucus' life.
And so then you've got an active minority party caucus and an active Democratic caucus as well, is that right?
Yeah, the Democratic caucus is called what do they call it? I don't know what they call it.
Do they function much?
I don't think so, because all the leadership is pretty much in the hands of the Democrats. I mean, it's the leadership group of the
The Cotton Caucus, the powerful one?
I don't know what they do, because besides invite people to supper every Sunday night, but because by and large they represent what has been the old and established membership of the House, and I presume the Senate too.
Did the blacks who were in the legislature at the time vote together as a group, or either consciously or unconsciously, but did they vote together as a group on the question of the election of the governor in 1967 when Maddox was elected?
I think so. I think it was not any deliberate thing, but I think the vote was, there may have been two exceptions. I'd have to go back and check that record on that because I don't remember. But I know most of the people voted against the seating of Maddox. Though there may have been, and it just vaguely seems to me that the black representative from the Richmond delegation voted with the delegation. But in the main, they were voted against. Or abstained, and it seems to me there was a very large group of abstentions.
And there's some votes for Calloway.
I don't remember. I just really don't remember. I think it was I just can't remember that.
As best you remember, then most of the people abstained.
Yeah. That was the year. That was the second year, wasn't it? The hassle on the first year was on the refusal to sink bond. You know, when he was. The other way that I've seen changes in the way the legislative body works during these 8 or 9 years I've been over there, is that, I guess I've already mentioned that, is that there seems to be more recognition of what the legislative process ought to be, and slowly, you know, it's improving, which is due to a great many factors. It's due to the speaker's leadership, for one thing. It's due to the governor's influence, and also to an improvement in the caliber of people that are present, I think.
How do you evaluate Carter as governor?
I think he's a man who has been a good governor. He's wanted to do many things that have needed doing, and he's gotten some of them done. But he is, his political sense is where I think he's weakest. He does not have, somebody says his greatest difficulty was that he was brought up in the Navy. And he thinks that when you command a submarine and you give the order, then it falls into line. And of course, the government body doesn't work like that. But I think he has moved the state along in some ways that well overdue.
Anything specific come to mind?
Well, he has consciously worked on increasing the representation of the black third of the population in state government on commissions and on, the various things that he's standing to. He's influenced the staffing. And then this matter of being willing to move steadily ahead on this symbolic inclusion of all of the people in the portraits to be hung in the Capitol. It's a little thing, but it, I think it has great significance. And
how about on his own staff? Does he have any blacks in key positions?
It's the first time ever that there's been a black on the governor's staff, and he has a person who is the director of his Human Relations Commission, which was established by executive order and not by law. But her name is Mrs. Rita Jackson, and she functions as a part of the governor's executive staff, which means that there is much more flowing back and forth.
She is staff director for the Human Relations Commission.
I think that's her. Yeah, she's the staff director for that, and I think it's known as the Governor's Council on Human Relations.
But the council remains under executive order. It has never been established.
It's never been
by
established in law. No. Congressional and Legislative Reapportionment Committee.
That's been your most important
job
in the legislature.
And I asked for that assignment. We can't be on the three committees. And my original committees when I were appropriations, education, and health and hygiene. And then the year when we were faced with congressional and legislative reapportionment, I asked to be told to speak. I wished to be on that committee. And I'll never forget that conversation. He said, I was going to ask you to be vice chairman of the health committee next year. I said, I don't need to be vice chairman of anything. I just wish to be on the reapportionment committee. So he wrote a little memorandum. He said, well, if you want to be on it, I'll put you on it. And I was the only black on it. And then we got congressional reapportionment through, which was the main effort, because we were wanting to get we were concentrating on getting a viable district for the 5th district, 4th and 5th, but in this metro area, 5th primarily. And then, the legislative reapportionment, had to be redone, but I've been, and the committee was much smaller from then on, but it's been a fascinating experience for me, and I've been very glad I was on it, because I think it's just fundamental, It makes possible. It doesn't necessarily do all that has to be done, but it creates the structure which maybe will. Then related to that, and it's funny how your interests flow over. I was working with the Charter Commission at the time, and one of my objectives, in addition to a great many others, was to see that the legislative body of the city was more representative than it had ever been in the past. and the same.
Did the new charter also strengthen the role of the executive?
Right. Divided. We'd have
I've been told that you were the key person on that legislation.
Well, I sponsored the legislation year after year after year till we got it through, which created the commission. And then I was the vice chairman of the charter commission. And we got a good document. And we got most of it passed.
What's your professional background and training?
My graduate work through the master's level was in psychology. I did my graduate. But all of my professional experience has been related to, I used to be described as a social worker, but then I always turned that off. Has been related to community organization pretty much. For many years, I worked with what was known as the community relations section of the National Board of the YWCA. Was concerned with race relations. And
have you been involved at all in Democratic Party politics?
To some degree. I am an elected member of the state executive committee. We're elected at the congressional district level. And I'm an elected member of the Fulton County Executive Committee. And I ran for a convention poll.
72?
Yeah, 72, but I didn't make it. It was, well, those congressional conventions were pretty much of a circus, you know. In any case, I didn't make it, so. And I do what I can on party matters at the county level and at the state level, too. But
if you breaking down by party lines, what percentage of blacks in Georgia would you say tend normally to support Democratic candidates?
Attend to them?
No, would tend normally to support Democratic
95%
candidates.
95%, I would guess.
What would Republicans have to do to regain black support? Am I correct that 20 years ago it would have been a majority?
Not 20 years ago, but a little bit longer than that, 25 years ago, I would guess. Most of them would have been thought of this. But that was because there was no access to the Democratic Party, really. No real access.
Mm-hmm. You're saying they're really Republicans by of necessity, in part.
Yeah,
and historically, in part.
That's right. And the Democratic Party has, in this state, has, I think, got the message that, you know, it's got to be open without racial barriers.
Do you feel that it is?
Well, I would say that it is, but it could be better. It's attitude more than the, I would say it pretty well is.
How about in rural areas, from what you hear?
That's very spotty. And I'm just fearful of generalizations. Now, I think in some rural areas, it is more, I know that from the Negroes from, you know, who get into Atlanta on state things, or who show up from rural areas, who who participate in such organization as the Democrats.
Ms. Hamilton, somebody told me that you were tending to be, that I would not find you to be a person who was particularly concerned with black awareness or women's awareness as much as human awareness.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. But I think human awareness is the main thing. But I think that I guess if there was one objective that is operated in terms of my basic consciousness is to try to further everything which makes it possible for people to be regarded on a person basis, you know, in terms of personal worth. And I guess that is, I think that the discriminations on race have been so all-pervading that is the first place to touch. Though all at the same time, you know, you want to do anything you can to see that women also have, but that has not been. I think the racial discriminations have been so all-pervading that of necessity, that requires.
Am I correct? There are only two women in the Georgia legislature?
Presently.
And both are black.
Both are black. When I went over there, though, there was one. There was another woman, who, from Sumter County, who was elected the session before I was elected. But she was defeated this last time.
What? Do you have any insight or ideas as to why there aren't more women in the legislature in Georgia?
I think there will be more. I don't know why there. How many are there in South Carolina?
Five.
And I know for a longer time there have been in South Carolina, haven't they?
There are four Republicans.
Four Republicans? Four of the five.
Four of the five.
There's a woman I knew. Well, she's still in the South Carolina. In 1966, she was in South Carolina. A nice little woman. She had been in the legislature for some time. What would her name be?
Might be Mrs. Fitzgerald, Columbia.
What's her first name?
Martha.
I think that's Martha Fitzgerald. Is she still?
No, she's not in there.
She didn't run?
I don't recall whether she got defeated or didn't run.
Yeah.
She's been out for some time.
I see. I haven't seen her since the late 60s and 70s.
You think there will be more?
I'm sure there will be more.
You think more will just be running? Is that?
No, I think there'll be more. There's a woman who's going to run as a Republican from North Fulton, I think she has a very good chance. And there's a black woman, very bright, who's going to run from a district which presently is represented by a white male. I think she's got a pretty good chance. I hope she would. And what have I heard about down the state? No, the husband of a woman who ought to be running is running for a post down in the South Georgia.
I wanted to get. I'll just take the runoff. It's about 30 seconds.
I cannot learn to use those things.